Welcome to Bowser Chevy Studio B. Here I am, City Limits, back in the studio. And what a wonderful man he is. We're off and running, City Limits. How are you?
I'm great, Joe, and I hope you are the same.
I'm good. I'm cut off from the outside world here because I can't seem to get the internet, and I blame you, City Limits, back in the home office, although I don't know how it could possibly be your fault. Do you?
No, I don't, but, you know, I'll take the responsibility for it.
Okay. I want to start off with a six-pack. I want to get right to work here. We have all kinds of things happening. We have the big boy coming in. Not coming in, unless he wants to. Doesn't he live out in this direction somewhere?
I don't think he does, no.
Well, he should drive out here and spend an hour with me. Wherever you are, Kabali, please do that. Let's open with a Wednesday six-pack. Why don't we? Limits, could you crack one for me? All right, this idiot at the Yankee game. That's where I have to start. I've never seen this in my life. John Sterling, who's been calling Yankee games forever, has never seen this in his life. Mookie Betts hits a foul ball, first inning. And some idiot, he catches the ball, right? Some idiot, I see his name here, I don't even want to name him, holds the glove while it's in his hand and starts, you know, working on it, giving the glove the business there, trying to get the ball out of it. And I don't know if a lot of people agree with this, but it was the other idiot who I think was even worse when he comes in and grabs Betts's arm, just reaches in and grabs his arm. You see it if you watch the video. Did both people get kicked out of the game? Or was it just the one guy, Limits? It clearly should have been both. In fact, the second guy, I thought, was more outrageous than what the first one did. Do you know if both got kicked out?
No, I know that the guy that ripped the ball out of Mookie Betts' glove, just how dumb do you have to be? He got kicked out, but I'm not sure about the other guy. And it's funny because the other guy, his buddy or whoever it was arguing with the security guard who went over there and basically was like, hey, what you doing? Why are you grabbing the ball out of his glove?
Exactly. And I still think it was the second guy who was even worse. I do. I don't know if you agree with that. I thought the second guy was worse. And it's... to say it's crossing the line is extremely light to me. It's sickening fan behavior. Any fan that thinks they have the right to do that and actually does it should never be in a stadium again. And I guess that's what they've told the one guy. And more to the point, anybody who wants to turn either one of these idiots into heroes or, you know, fighting for your team, are you kidding me? They're the opposite of that. They're a couple of morons. And if Mookie Betts had gone up there and punched either one of them right in the jaw and cracked their jaw, I would have defended his right to do that. You buy a ticket, you go to the game, you cheer. You do not touch the people who are playing in the game, let alone grab their arm in an aggressive manner like that, or... in the first guy's case, it was just ridiculous. I mean, grab the glove and sit there and try and pry it open and pull the ball out? What the hell are they doing, Limits? Or if any of the other Dodgers had gone out there and violently approached these people, I would have defended their right to do that.
Yeah, if Mookie Betts just would have started grappling with this fan and started a significant issue, like... Where does this rate on the Steve Bartman comparison? I feel like that this is probably maybe the worst fan interference moment we've seen in a significant playoff game.
I mean, Bartman was just going for a foul ball. I think a lot of us would have done that, you know? This is way different on the Bartman scale. Way, way different. This is closer to, you know, the Malice at the Palace crap, where you're becoming physically engaged with athletes in a game. I mean, it's insane.
And both guys were ejected.
Good. And the looks on the one guy's face, like proud of himself for doing it. It was sickening, man. It really was. You know, at first you think it's funny, and then you just look at that guy. And I'm with Dan Le Batard, who said this morning that this makes him root against New York more than ever before. I'm with him. I'm on Team Lebatard today. I'm rooting against them more than I ever have in my life.
The John Sterling, Susan Waldman call was hilarious. Reacting to fan interference. I have it, and I also have Fox's call. Here's John Sterling with the Yankees first.
Pitch hit in the air to right. Cutting toward the line is Betts in the corner. I can't see where what happened. Like, I honestly don't know.
That's interference. Got to be. The fan took the ball out of his hand. He's out.
See, if the ball goes in the corner, the stands that jut out take away our view. So Betts went right into the corner in the wall. Let's look, Susan.
Well, he's got the ball, and a fan took it right out of his glove. You can see it. He's got his glove in his hand. The fan in a Yankee uniform is prying the ball out of Mookie's glove. This guy should be kicked out of this game.
I couldn't agree more.
Oh, my goodness.
He's allowed a root, and that's all. I couldn't agree more.
He physically opened up Mookie's glove as he was trying to get the glove back. You don't want to lose your glove. And he took the ball out of his glove.
So there's one away, and here's Juan Soto.
Oh, my.
And the pitch is high. I've seen people go for baseballs before. Have I ever in my 40-odd years of broadcasting baseball? I've never seen that.
Nope. Take the ball out of a player's glove?
Yeah, me neither.
Flabbergasted.
I have never seen that. It's one thing. Listen, if you go for a foul ball and you get tangled up with a player, obviously, right? I mean, we've seen fans interfere. You shouldn't reach over the fence and all that stuff, and that could impact your team in a game, all that junk. This is an entirely different category. This is a fan aggressively grabbing one of the combatants in a game. And never come back. Is there technology that enables, you know, team security forces to keep fans out of ballparks or arenas, stadiums? Do they have that kind of technology? Is it even possible, limits?
Yeah, I mean, I feel like with technology, so many things are within that realm. How would you regulate that, though?
I don't know. I'm not a technology guy. Facial recognition, some other thing that we don't know about?
Yeah, probably facial rec.
Do they have computer chips in us yet? Do they know where we're going at all times? I don't know. But I'd certainly be trying. I'd certainly be trying. And the fact, what makes it 10 times worse is people trying to turn this guy into a hero. Get the hell out of here. Next.
He's a zero.
Thank you, Limits, for cracking the second one. Here's a guy who showed fight that I loved last night. And I'm going to get to Fleury in a minute because there were some incredible moments at the end of that game. This was a landmark event in a Penguins game, what we witnessed last night. And I'll overdo it. I don't think I am overdoing it. Jack St. Ivany went full 1970s, full old school. Finally, somebody on that team, other than, like, you know, Gino becomes their enforcer at times. Somebody defends Sidney Crosby. And not only defends him, jumps off the bench in the middle of a game. There were six people on the ice when Saban Ivany jumped over the boards and fought Brock Faber. God bless him, Jack St. Ivany, for doing that. It's one of the greatest things I've seen in recent Penguins history. Because this team has no fight. At least a lot of them don't. It's supposed to be hard to play against. They're easy to play against. The Oilers coach said it the other night with his goalie against the Penguins. Oh, this is one of his easier games. But they're doing everything the opposite of what Mike Sullivan wants them to do. Including this, probably. He doesn't seem to be that interested himself in having people on the team who will defend Crosby to this extent. And I loved it. And I got the sense on social media that people loved it. And you saw what happened in the game right after it. It's interesting watching the post game with Colby Armstrong and Jay Caulfield. I felt like Jay wanted to say so much more than what he said. So much more. But he was constraining himself. Sick and tired of watching the polite Penguins for all these years now. It's been multiple years of this crap. Where either Sid is defending himself or somebody like Gino is the guy to jump in on Jacob Trouba the next year after Trouba chicken wings Sid in the head and takes him out of a playoff series. If there was a team award for the Lady Bing Trophy, the Penguins would be the 5-time defending champion. I'm sick of watching it. Maybe they could use that Yankee fan on the ice. Thankfully, and it takes a guy like Jack St. Ivany to say, screw it, I'm jumping off the bench and fighting this guy. It was awesome. Now, I'll tell you what Bob Airey said about this 2 years ago, or three. I don't even remember. It was when Austin Watson laid out Sid with a cross check to the back, and nobody made him answer for it. Nobody on that team made him answer for a cross check to your star player to the back. Crosby skated alone back to the bench and was pissed off. Nobody else was. And here's what Bob Airey said about that. Some of those guys can, quite frankly, try to get out of their comfort zone and bring a little extra to the table. It takes some courage sometimes to do something different, no matter what it is in life, doesn't it? That's what Bob said. That's a strength, a quality your teammates admire. Just an extra run at somebody, whether it was Watson or somebody else. Sid wouldn't have even had to react, he said. You know, inside he would have appreciated those. I know 66 did. That's what those guys used to do for him. Multiple guys. And I realized the rules were different then. Screw the rules. Jump off a bench and have six guys on the ice and get yourself in trouble with the league if you have to. Defend your star. Defend your franchise. It's embarrassing. The Penguins have been doing, or more accurately, not doing for years. Here's what Caulfield said. When I brought up Airey's take, and again, this is a couple years ago, one of many, you know, pick whichever one you want. This was Austin Watson laying out Sid with a gutless cross check to the back, and nobody on that bench or that locker room making him pay for it in any way, shape, or form. Caulfield said at the time, I'm tired of seeing that. There's no reason you shouldn't jump in. Without Sid, you're not making your money. How about that? These are Caulfield's words. When Sidney Crosby goes down like that, I wouldn't want to be in that locker room if I didn't do anything. That's a fact, says Caulfield. I would not want to be in that locker room and look across to him. What are you going to do? Ask him if he's okay? Unbelievable quotes there from two guys who were never, ever, ever afraid to do whatever it took to defend their star. Might mean going after the other team's star with a big hit. It might be avenging it real time. And again, yeah, the rules have changed. Didn't prevent Jack St. Ivany from jumping off the bench and going to fight a guy. That was great. And it was also embarrassing for everybody involved because it hasn't happened in so long. That's my take on that. City Limits, could you crack another one, please?
I may.
Would you like to share on that? Did you have an opinion on that? We're in two separate places separated by approximately 25 miles, and I didn't want to deprive you of a take.
You know, Joe, when they traded for Ryan Reeves years ago and they gave up a first-round pick, I was like, why? Why would you give up a first-round pick for a guy that's a bottom-six type of player, not very productive offensively, is just kind of an enforcer? And the more and more time that has passed since Ryan Reeves has been on the team, I understand why more and more the Penguins made the trade that they did, because no one messed with the Penguins, at least as much, when Ryan Reeves was on the team, because he was their Trouba. He was their Tom Wilson, who would go right at you and not be afraid to come and just kick your you-know-what because you messed with Sid or Gino.
Yeah, here's where I would disagree a little bit there, Limits, and push back. I thought he changed his personality when he got here. That was A. And B, he wasn't allowed to do that because Sully never played him. Yeah. And C, listen, you're not going to stop people from doing what they do. Hockey players are nuts anyway. Do you think the specter of Ryan Reeves is going to keep somebody from Tom Wilson from doing what he does? No.
No.
But that doesn't mean you don't get retribution. That doesn't mean you don't do it to them, to their star. Go after a Nicklas Backstrom the way they go after Sid and all that. It's just been way too long of having to watch that. And it's a franchise embarrassment is what it is. The lack of protection for Sidney Crosby. And like I said, God bless St. Ivany. He is a saint, City Limits. He's the patron saint of protecting Sid, and he'll forever be in our hearts for that. Thank you. Next. All right, let's get to Fleury. At the end of the show yesterday, you know, I was feeling it a little bit, but I was also feeling like, how many times can we say goodbye to this guy? Yeah, this is the longest send-off since Jerry Rand from KDK TV. Do you remember I said that yesterday?
I do.
Limits. But you know what? And even the video, while it was moving, I've seen that video. Like, haven't they played the Fleury video 19 times already? Like how many going away parties can we have? But after the game and the end of the game, I did have little tears come up. That was incredible. I can't believe he made the same save on the other side of the net toward the end of the game that he did to win the cup with a legendary save on Nicklas Lidström that Ron Cook thinks was an overrated save, which is still the most amazing take I've ever heard in 20 years of talk radio of doing it. That Ron thought it was an overrated save. And I miss Ron, and I know you do too. I mean, to me, the Stanley Cup's on the line in Game 7. You let out a juicy rebound at a high rate of speed at a very sharp angle right onto the stick of the second greatest defenseman, arguably, who ever lived. And he blasts a shot that's labeled for the net, and you lurch out and make a ridiculous save to win the Stanley Cup. I don't know. I think that's kind of a good save. And he did the same thing on the other side of the net last night. Did you see that? And did you see Fleury say after the game that he thought of that? Whoever was calling the game was all over it. I can't remember now. Well, it must have been, was it?
It was Borky.
It was Borky and Getzoff, right? That's who I was watching. And they were on it. And Fleury thought of it. And I can't believe that that happened. I can't believe that that happened because it's an unusual style of save to make. Is it not, Limits?
It is unusual. Honestly, I'm not surprised that something like that happened because it seems like in so many moments when it's a send-off, it's a goodbye, like Derek Jeter walk-off and what, his final game at Yankee Stadium. You see odd moments like this that bring you back to the past. So while it's surprising in some ways, it's not at the same time because it's like we've seen this script before, but it's just a different situation, but it's still as awesome as it could be every time.
I mean, if he had made a great save to win the game, you say, well, isn't that poetic? But to make the sort of style of save that you don't see very often, a lurching across with your upper body like it's a wrestling move or something, I couldn't believe it. I really couldn't. That gave me chills at the end of the game. Then to see the class acts that are Sid and Chris Letang waiting for Fleury at the Penguins bench after, and I'm getting chills and now talking about it. What is happening here? I'm in Monroeville and there's little goosebumps rising, Limits. The crowd is chanting Fleury. He saved the game late. Everybody hugs him on his team. And then the camera pans over, and there waiting at the Penguins bench is Sid and Letang. And if you didn't have a flood of memories engulf you at that point, if you didn't get emotional at that point, you're not human. It was unbelievable. So, so classy, really. And such a statement that, you know, whatever just happened in the game, we lost, you won. Pales in comparison to what we did together. And he went over there and they stick tapped him and I think told him, from what I read anyway, to enjoy the moment. Oh my God. And then he does a post game interview and the whole thing. Were you watching it live?
Yeah, I turned it on to see. I kept it on to see him being named first star, being interviewed on Sportsnet. We have both of those clips as well. Where, I mean, just seeing Letang and Sid, I don't know where Gino was, but waiting for him at the end of the Penguins bench and the crowd saluting him the way that they did. You know, it's kind of sad because, you know, our guy Folesy pointed this out on Twitter last night, but I think he's 100% correct, and I had a similar feeling on it. It seems like the Penguins now are just a remembrance of what was in 2009, 2016, 2017, more than what could be in the next year or couple years.
Yeah, I mean, that was a moment to remember. Certainly not one to look ahead. It was a moment that is going to stick in my brain for a long time. It really will. To see those two guys waiting for him and then sort of sending him off on one last lap. I was there the day the dude was drafted, for God's sakes. Where was that? Was that North Carolina? I don't remember where it was. I think it was. I did a memorable interview with Rob King. I did, or was that the Fleury draft or the Ryan Whitney draft? They had me on what then was Fox Sports. I was doing TV that weekend.
Oh.
I don't remember if somebody was sick limits. It was Ryan Whitney. I interviewed him the day he was drafted for television. Are you proud of me?
Congratulations on all your success.
Thank you. Thank you. It was great. It was 2003 when they drafted Fleury, actually. And, you know, there was some talk, do you draft the goalie? Yeah, take the goalie. And I remember his first game against the Kings, where he was phenomenal. I think they lost the game. He made 50-some saves, and then he was on the shuttle back and forth from Wilkes-Barre, to save money, I believe, at the time. And then, you know, all the things he did. He gave them a chance to win a cup in which they were outplayed for, like, almost every minute of an entire series. He took Game 6 against a great Red Wings team in 2008, took it right to the end of the game. They almost went 7 that year. And I don't know if you've heard limits, but anything can happen in Game 7. And you found out the following year when he took them to the cup. And again, and then he went through some very, very bad times in the playoffs and things like that. And people wanted to run him out of town, which everybody forgets about. But then he came back. He made a comeback. And I still think he basically won them the cup in 17. Yes, the second cup under Sully.
Yeah, when Matt Murray was banged up.
Yeah, although he was ready to play by the Washington series, as I recall, but you couldn't take Fleury out of the Nets at that point. That was the best team they played in that postseason, and Fleury stole that series and basically won them a cup. So what a night, what a moment, and great, great coverage by... What's it called now?
Sportsnet Pittsburgh.
Yes, Sportsnet Pittsburgh. Unbelievable coverage of how everything went down at the end. A salute to them. But what's coming next is not a salute. Please crack another one. All right, outside of Jack St. Ivany and a few others, the Penguins are a disaster, man. They are a disaster. And in any other market, the talk right now would be, is the coach getting fired? They're swimming with the sharks, which is not where you want to be. Not on a beach and not in the NHL. The only team in the NHL with fewer points than the Penguins is the San Jose Sharks right now. What have they lost? 6 in a row? And this is coming off 2 disappointing seasons? So any other market, anywhere, you'd be saying, all right, you're coming off 2 bad seasons. You didn't make the playoffs. And now you're off to a horrendous start. You're on a lengthy losing streak. And the only team in the league worse than you is the San Jose Sharks. Are they going to fire the coach? That's just a natural, obvious topic. And my answer would be, I don't think so. But then again, how can it not be at least on their minds, no matter how much Fenway Sports Group loves Mike Sullivan? How can that not be something they're considering? He has 2 years left on his contract, plus all of this season. So really, you're talking about 3 years. But we've reached the point where the team isn't doing what the coach wants them to do pretty much ever. I mean, we could get into intricacies and X's and O's. And I know Sully knows more hockey than you or I or anybody else out there knows in the tip of his pinky than all of us know in our whole brains and bodies. But it does kind of boil down to, in any sport with any coach, when the team literally never does what the coach wants them to do and they lose all the time too, that becomes an issue. And that probably comes back on the coach. Call me crazy. But when the team never does what the coach wants them to do and loses all the time, that should come back on the coach. And I don't know how much longer you can look at this if you're whoever's running the ship from Fenway Sports Group. And that's an entirely different topic we could dive into. On the other hand, oh, limitless wonder, there could be a silver lining here. And that's this, that the Penguins have already gotten to where a lot of people wanted them to go over these past few years. They've sunk to the bottom of the league. For proof, look at the standings. You'll find the Penguins in last place in their division, in last place in the Eastern Conference, and in the whole league, only the Sharks are worse, and that's only by a point. Penguins have 7 points in 11 games. Sharks have 6 and 11. So you could actually say, this is fantastic. They did this without even trying. They literally, sometimes, got to the bottom of the league. Let's do everything in our power to keep them there because that's what's best for the franchise. So you could say, let's take every good player right now that's possible to trade. And nobody's impossible to trade. I don't care what their contracts say. And try to find ways to move good players. You could make that argument at least. Joel Blomqvist is playing really well. Okay, send him to the minors. Go full EJ, full Eddie Johnston from 83-84 here. Get as many bad players. I mean, these guys are doing a great job themselves of sinking to the bottom of the league, but maybe they could use some help. Get rid of good players, bring in bad players, send down the goalie who plays really well. Those would be all steps I would consider. I don't know that I'm ready to do that right now, but I can't help but notice that the place the Penguins need to be, which is either toward the top of the league or toward the bottom, and most would agree toward the bottom's way more realistic and beneficial. They got there on their own. They did it without any help. What do you need to do to keep them there? And then the question becomes, what do you do with Sid? I think you do whatever Sid wants, actually. I'm talking about with him. If he wants to stay, great. If you decide you want to go full rebuild, then you simply ask him, would you want to stay around for that? What can we do for you? What are your wishes here? Because obviously, he should get to do whatever he wants. But man, have they become, for maybe all the wrong reasons, but like I said, maybe a silver lining of a reason, they have become a gigantic story here in October. I didn't expect this. I didn't expect it to become this big of a story. 412-928-9370. I didn't even get to football yet. I certainly will. Ben has had some interesting things to say. Welcome back. I am out at Bowser Chevy today, my very own studio. Very excited to be here. City Limits back in the home studio. The big boy, Mark Cabali, with all things Steelers in the noon hour. We're going to take a trip around the NFL. Top of the hour, we're going to hear from Ben from his podcast, Never Short of Opinions. But in the meantime, we never finished our six-pack limits. Please crack one. Dan Graziano of ESPN with a huge breaking news story. Russell Wilson expected to remain Steelers starter.
Wow.
Is that what his sources told him? I mean, this is just mind-blowing here. What reporting we have on this one. Really? I never thought this was possible. Limits.
I mean, like, really? Why is this non-story being made a story by the national media? Or maybe it's Dan Graziano, who has been so anti-Tomlin, anti-Steelers.
Has he? I didn't know that, actually.
I think not like so far extreme. Well,
what do you mean?
Yeah,
what exactly
really like
do you mean anti-Tomlin? I mean, I've been highly critical of Tomlin for not winning a playoff game in 7 years. What do you mean by that?
Well, what I mean by that is there are a couple of people who like to take a lot of jabs at the Steelers for whether it's being mediocre or saying, oh, Mike Tomlin, he's done such a great job with less. It seems like they're so critical of the Steelers.
Why shouldn't they be?
Well, I mean, I agree that they should, but I feel it's weird, though, that Russell Wilson puts up those two performances that he did, and now the same people who were in Justin Fields' camp, I mean, we've shifted. Why is the national media not shifting as quickly as we have?
You don't think they are?
Well, I think so, but I don't understand why, at the same point, Dan Graziano has to make this big story out of something that seems like nothing. I mean, we all know that Russell Wilson's
the starter. Yeah, that's my point. That's my point. Yes, I mean, is that it's characterized as breaking news? I mean, you went into a very wide ranging meaning behind this. I'm not sure I see that. All I see is a guy who is claiming breaking news here on a story. It's like, you know, according to Starkey, the sun is out today. You know, everybody I think knows that. All you got to do is look out the window, right?
Yes.
Come on, Limits, cheer up today, will you? What's going on back there? You've gone silent.
I don't intend to.
Okay.
We're doing well.
All right. We are doing well. We're winning the game so far. There we go. Thank you. And speaking of national media who's actually changing their mind, how about Stink Schlereth, the self-proclaimed Stink Schlereth, who absolutely shredded Russell Wilson. Shredded him in a personal way, I thought. Went too far. Basically said, you know, he talked about toxic positivity with Russell Wilson and how last season was a complete fraud with Russell Wilson. He's still wrong, by the way, as you'll hear in this clip we have. But at least Stink Schlereth, who I like, by the way, is admitting that he, too, was wrong about Russell Wilson. Where is this from, Limits, and could you play it?
This is from Breakfast Ball on FS1.
I'm going to go ahead and just do this with my chest because I learned that from you, that you've got to say it with your chest. I learned it from you. Right. So
big
I could sit
guy,
here. I could sit here. Yeah, the last 2 years in Denver were atrocious. There's no question about that. And you know what? And that's what I based my opinion on the last 2 years. It's a pretty good sample size. He has come into Pittsburgh. They have put him in a great system. They have thrown the ball outside the numbers. That's where they live right now. Those are the things that Russell does well. Throw the balls outside the numbers. See, not a lot of completion or a lot of attempts in the middle of the football field. Outside the numbers and deep. He's as good as anybody throwing the ball outside the numbers, as good as anybody throwing the ball deep. Maybe one of the best deep ball passers ever. Now, that sounds like an excuse, right? But he has basically accepted the coaching, accepted what he didn't do well. He is living in the world of what he can do. And I got to tell you right now that I was wrong.
What?
The dude is playing. Now, it's a small sample size against the Jets and the Giants.
Yep.
But this dude, if he continues to do this, throw the ball deep, outside the numbers, this is where he lives. You can't throw the ball any better than that. And Russell Wilson has been the difference.
Listen,
He throws some caveats in there. And then the part that he's dead wrong about is that the last 2 years in Denver were atrocious. I don't know what he's talking about. Russell Wilson last year had a five-game stretch. I'm going to read you some numbers here, Wonder Twin. He beat five playoff teams in a row, and he threw nine touchdowns, no interceptions, with a passer rating over 100. He beat Green Bay, 20 of 29, 200 yards, touchdown, no picks, 100 rating. He beat Kansas City. They never do that in Denver. I'm talking about the Broncos. But the game was in Denver. 12 of 19, three touchdowns, no picks, 120 rating. I guess that's atrocious in Stink's world. Buffalo on a Monday night against Josh Allen and the Bills. Very good team back when their defense was healthy last year, or relatively so. 24 of 29, 193, two touchdowns, no picks, two fourth quarter drives to win the game, and a 117.4 rating. Minnesota, the next week, 27 of 35, 259, touchdown, no picks, 106.7 rating. And finally, Cleveland, against that great, historically amazing Browns defense, they win 29 to 12. He goes 13 of 22, 92 passer rating, plus he runs the ball for 34 yards and a touchdown, including a 19-yard run. That's atrocious? That's really the word he used? He still thinks that's true? What is he talking about? Wilson finished with 26 touchdowns, 8 interceptions, one of the better passer ratings in the whole NFL. In an organization where the coach hates him, and the rest of the organization was working against him. All of that. But I guess in Stink's world, that was atrocious. But at least now he says he was wrong about Wilson. Thank you, Limits. Top of the hour. Ben Roethlisberger had an interesting take on the Steelers' offense. I'm just going to leave it there. I was going to give a little minor tease to that, but I'll leave it there. I think a surprising take on the Steelers offense, and we're going to hear about that in just a minute. The 50-minute mark on the Fan, brought to you by South Hills Chrysler Jeep Dodge, Route 19, Peters Township, celebrating 50 years in the South Hills. Let's go to the card of the week. Listen to this show every Wednesday to hear about Starkey's Card of the Week from the Baseball Card Castle and Cranberry Contest. Run every Wednesday through Friday, right around noon at the 93.7thefan.com contesting page. Limits, do you have a guest on the Card of the Week?
I'm going to say Marc-Andre Fleury, Joe, for being honored last night at the game.
I mean, where else would we go? All of a sudden, I can't even remember the Steelers game the other night. I'm drawing complete blanks on it. Oh. Go with a Calvin Austin card and a Fleury card. General, how are you today?
Gentlemen, good morning. Good to see you. Thanks for having me. You're both on fire today. We'd be remiss if we didn't honor Marc-Andre Fleury tonight after returning to the Berg for the last time. So we're going to go primarily with the 2003 Topps Marc-Andre Fleury rookie card. Can you believe that's 21 years ago? That's amazing.
And I was in Nashville that day. That's where the draft was, in Nashville, Tennessee. Marc-Andre Fleury, the first overall pick. He looked like he was 7 years old, General. Go ahead.
I got to tell you that we have, outside of people that wear black and gold, and maybe even rivaling that, we still sell more Fleurys than anybody.
Really?
It's amazing. It's a cult following. Like, and I think the niceness and the quality of man that he is also contributes to that. That people have so many fond memories of him that
it's
we
nice.
Still sell Fleurys. I keep Fleury in the Pittsburgh section to this day because of that.
It's nice to be nice to the nice. Frank Burns said that on MASH one time, General. Are you saying that you sell more Fleury cards than Crosby or Geno?
No, I'm saying I sell more Fleury cards than anybody than like the big three. And that's
okay.
Unprecedented when someone leaves. Typically, it tapers off to nothing. And Fleury still rivals those guys. He's not surpassed, but especially with hockey players, young players, goalies obviously in particular, we get more requests for Fleury than any non-Penguin. And I think people in their hearts still consider him a Penguin.
Holy bird milk. All right, who else do you have?
Let's throw in Calvin Austin also. And I didn't do this to patronize your guesses. I have both of these cards laying in front of me because we'd be remiss if we didn't go with a Calvin Austin autographed rookie card.
Oh, my gosh.
After showing us the flashes on Monday night, we got two touchdowns. I got a select autographed Calvin Austin, the third card.
That's the General Patton, Jeff Patton from the Baseball Card Castle in Cranberry, right around noon today through Friday. You go on our website and our contesting page for a chance to win those cards. I've never done this before, General. May I at least make a request for a third card to add to that?
You sure can.
To me, and I think to a lot of people, Jack St. Ivany became a hero last night by saying, screw it, I'm going to jump over the bench and defend Sidney Crosby here and fight. And that's what he did. And I respect that. I know a lot of former Penguins who respected that. I bet you Sidney Crosby did too. He's probably going to get in trouble, St. Ivany, from the league today. There were six players on the ice when he jumped over the bench. But, man, it's about damn time somebody did that, like years' worth of time.
In the current climate of our world, it is one of the redeeming factors in hockey that there is a level of loyalty to your teammates that still is prevalent. And as soon as he gets a card, we'll add it. It might have to be future compensation, but we'll put it in with his package.
A card to be named later.
He doesn't have a card yet, but...
that's sad. When he gets go ahead.
When he gets one, he gets in here.
It should be a card of him fighting... Later. From last night. The card should be him fighting from last night. General, you're a wonderful man, thank you.
After all, it is Starkey's card of the week, so feel free to add anytime.
I appreciate it, man. See ya.
Have a good week.